this can really be the saving grace for you not having to redo your album, or at least redo the guitars, because that does happen. I've just had to tell people that I cannot work with what they've done, especially in guitars. It's the easiest thing to get totally wrong.
This is the Self-Recording Band Podcast, the show where we help you make exciting records on your own, wherever you are, DIY style. Let's go. Hello and welcome to the Self-Recording Band Podcast. I'm your host, Benedict Tyne, and I'm here with my co-host from stonemastering.com, mastering engineer Malcolm Owen Flutt. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. Got the whole website in there in my pre-show introduction. Awesome.
Yeah, exactly. I need to point people to that. So, because sometimes we forget to mention what you actually do, and it's worth mentioning because you basically transitioned to mastering more and more. Lately. And yeah, I want people to hit you up because you're obviously great at what you do, and we should push that. So
come on over, folks. Yeah, come visit the website or message me on Facebook and stuff. It's nice hearing from you.
Exactly. Awesome. For people who are not aware, we always record two episodes, or we try to record two episodes in a row. So when we do that, so like today, the second one, the banter in the beginning is always a little harder because we already had that in the first one.
Yeah, so. We already caught up. We got nothing to talk about other than our topic, I guess. But I got one. I got new studio monitors installed in the mastering suite. So I'm really stoked.
Right on. The Neumanns. Yeah, they are amazing.
Actually, yeah, it's awesome.
They got more popular lately, I think, because I don't know, but that's what I'm thinking, because so many people recommend them to me. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's just people in my circle, but they seem to become really popular. And I'm curious, what was the reason you were going for these specifically?
Well, just because I'm doing more mastering work, I wanted to get more full range speakers. And the studio I originally interned at had three-way speakers. And I really, really loved that. I thought they just really worked for my ears really well, and I was getting the results I liked out of them. Up until now, I was using the Neumann KH120s, which are like just regular kind of smaller monitors. Great, great units. I would highly recommend them. But they don't really have any subwoofer capabilities. So I wanted to get something, and preferably a three-way system for how I like to do things, that gave me some more low end. And just made making those decisions easier in the mastering environment, especially. And going up just to the next level of the Neumann 310s, it's kind of like I've got the same speakers in front of me, just with more. It was like I didn't have to relearn a new system, pretty much. It's pretty familiar to me. So it was kind of the logical next step. And they just look super badass.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, right on. I totally agree with three-way thing. I mean, I have set like midfield three-way monitors as well. And I totally love to work on bigger speakers, even if you're sitting close to them. So yeah, it's just more headroom, more low end. It's amazing to work on speakers like that. I don't know. Maybe I'll check them out one day, because I love my Adams still. And I'm mentioning that because I know that a lot of DIY people at home have the very popular Adam speakers, like the A7X or whatever they are called.
Yep.
They are really popular. And I had the bigger versions of them, the A77X, for years now, like the three-way version. And I really like them, and I'm so used to them. But I'm actually, I don't know why it took me so long, but I'm kind of getting a little tired of those ribbon tweeters right now. It wasn't an issue in the beginning, and I actually liked that quality that they have. Like, they make everything sound a little harsh and a little fatiguing, but I liked that because it just, they were very honest, and so I just liked how fast they are. But I don't know why, but after using them for a couple of years now, I'm starting to get a little tired of them, and I've listened to some other speakers, including the Neumanns, and I really liked how they sounded. I'm a little afraid, though, because they sounded so nice compared to mine, so...
I get that, for sure. Well, ironically, because I had the smaller Neumanns, like I just mentioned, but I sold them in anticipation of these arriving, but these were like a week behind due to shipping delays. So I had to borrow some Atoms. So I had the A7Xs in the studio for about a week. Actually, they're still sitting in the vocal booth next door to me, but I got to return those. Sorry, Zach. they were great. But I also have found the same thing. Having Atoms before I had my Neumanns, the ribbon just kind of got to me after a while. So I changed it up, and you should too. No, I'm joking. Your work is like, I wanted to just say, like, when you started talking about this, I'm like, Benny, your work is awesome. Like, you don't need to change anything. just don't mess with a good thing. You're good.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for that. Yeah, probably, but I don't know. You know how that is. Sometimes you want to just change things, and yeah, I don't know. But anyways, let's get to today's episode. We are not talking about speakers. We are talking, as always, about what's coming out of the speakers. And a part of rock music and what people listen to is a very important part, actually, is the guitar tone. And there are many ways you can record a guitar, but one thing you should always consider is recording a DI track when you record guitars. So a DI track basically means, in addition to miking an amplifier or using an amp sim or capturing any sort of amp tone, you capture the signal that's coming out of your instrument directly, like the very thing that comes out of your, that your pickups produce, basically. You capture that and record it to a separate track along with your tone. And that is such a no-brainer to do, and we're going to talk about why that is. So first of all, there is something called reamping. So, Malcolm, would you like to explain what reamping is and give a quick overview about it?
Sure. Reamping is super cool. Essentially, because you're capturing this clean DI signal of your guitar, it means that you have this kind of like genie in a bottle of your guitar performance that you can output into any other amp down the road. Now, this is important for a few reasons, but the coolest benefit is that sometimes you're recording guitars really early in the production process. Like Benny, you like to do it right after drums usually. So all you have is a drum kit and a guitar, and you're making tonal decisions for how this guitar is going to sound without all this other stuff built around it yet. And by having this DI, it means that you can change your mind on those tone decisions after. So you might record an amp when you're doing guitars, but you can now swap that out for a totally different tone by taking this DI, throwing it into a new amp, and re-recording it. So we are reamping, is taking that DI into a new amp and re-recording it, and changing the tone to be whatever you want.
Right. That's exactly what it is. There's certain tools for it that, but it's not really important to know. It's just that, yeah, taking that DI signal and treating it as if someone would be playing the guitar, basically, mm-hmm. and then sending it to an amp or a sim. So now you could be like, okay, I record my DI signal along with my amp or my amp sim. And then if I decide that I don't like my tone, I can just reamp it and play around with it as long as I find something that I like. While that is true, and you can't do that, of course, and sometimes you might have played a really awesome take, but you're not kind of like not quite satisfied with the tone, and then but you still want to use that take, so you can just change the tone, which is great. But I think it is a good idea to let the mixer do it, whoever is mixing this, because guitar tone is very hard to judge without context. Mm-hmm. And a great thing about having a guitar DI is that you can send your tone and your vision and what you were listening to when you were recorded to a mixer along with the DI track, and the mixer can then make decisions based on context, everything else, the whole song, the whole arrangement. That will be much more useful than trying to come up with a tone during tracking stage. It all depends on how good the tones are that you're getting. If they are already close to what the final thing will sound like, it will be easier. But sometimes people will record really raw sounding tracks, and sometimes the whole vibe might change a bit in mixing, and it's just a good idea to let the mixer do it. So always send, you can of course find your tone, but always send the clean DI mm-hmm. along with the version that you heard when you were tracking. It's also worth noting that you should always include the actual amp tone, by the way, or a simulation at least. Something that comes close to what you want to hear on the record, because otherwise a mixer has to guess what you want, and it can, like, the whole thing could end up being completely different than what you were going for. So always send some directional info, and at least a scratch track can be a sim or whatever along with the DI. And then if it's great, you can use it. And if it's not great, it can easily be replaced with something in that direction, but just better.
Yeah. I personally think you should still try and get the guitar tone right.
Yep.
As you go. Depending on your situation. If you just don't have the gear and you can't afford the gear, but you can get a good DI, then hell yeah. Don't let that stop you from recording. Just get a good DI and know that you're going to put it in a trusted mixer's hand, like Benny, who's going to give you a good guitar tone in the end. But in general, try and get a great guitar tone recorded. But also have a DI, because that's not the only reason to have DIs. There's a few other reasons that we'll get into. I'm kind of at this crossroad where, like, up until like 6 months ago, I rarely DI'd, or sorry, rarely reamped ever. But now I'm starting to really fall in love with it. And it's kind of changing how I think about things. So I don't know. I still spend a lot of time getting guitar tones when I do recording. But I also am way more open to the possibility of reamping later down towards mixing.
Absolutely. I mean, to be honest, when I record, I don't do it a lot because I'm very confident with my decisions. And I kind of build the arrangement and how everything sounds and the tones while I record. But that comes with experience. I'd highly recommend you dial in your tone, absolutely, just as Malcolm said. I just mentioned that it is a good idea to let the mixer do it, because people might think, okay, I record the DI, then after I tracked it, I find my tone, and then I just send that tone to the mixer. So I just wanted to tell people that they also should include the DI and be open for the mixer to reamp stuff. Because not because they shouldn't dial in the tone, but as I said, like, people could use the benefits, the workflow benefits of a DI track, but not use the full benefit that comes from sending that DI track to the mixer. Hey friend, this is Benedict from theselfrecordingband.com, and if you are producing your own songs, I have a question for you. Do you ever listen to your music and feel like something is just off? Maybe the drums sound weak, or the guitar tone bothers you, maybe the vocals don't really cut through the mix, or the whole thing just doesn't sound finished and professional, but you can't really put your finger on it? I know you want to release big, punchy, professional sounding songs, right? The type of authentic, unique art that connects with your audience on a deep level. But you're just not sure what's missing with your recordings. Somehow you just can't connect all the dots. And I get it, the amount of things to learn and all the conflicting information out there can be really overwhelming. Especially if you're a lone wolf trying to figure it all out on your own, right? Now here's the good news. Whether you've been self-recording for years, or you're just setting up your first home studio, I want to offer you my personal one-on-one help. As long as you are determined to put in the work, I'm offering a limited amount of free one-on-one coaching calls with me. On this hour-long call, we'll dive deep into your recordings and create a personalized roadmap for you to finally solve the issues you're struggling with, so that you can release music that you'll be proud of forever. If you are ready to see and believe that it's actually possible to achieve your goals and make the records you've always wanted to make, then go to theselfrecordingband.com/call and apply for one of my limited coaching spots. I can assure you that making exciting and successful DIY records is very doable. We've done it, lots of other people have done it, you can do it as well. Talk soon, theselfrecordingband.com/call.
Right. There's one more really important thing that was kind of hidden in there, is that it's really important that you do record an amp tone as well, even if it's an amp sim, because what you're hearing when you're recording that guitar is going to change how you play. So you want to set a tone that reflects how the part's meant to sound, because it's going to change how your hands actually play the riff. If it's, like, you know, not distorted enough, you might try digging in extra hard to get it to kind of sound distorted. And, you know, that could be a good thing or a bad thing. But the point is that you will play different based on the amp that you're monitoring. So do have that just so you're actually hitting the performance how it's meant to be. Because if you play the guitar, if it's meant to be like this big, heavy, aggressive riff and you're playing it really soft, that DI is not going to sound heavy when we reamp it later. It has to be played that way first and foremost.
Absolutely. And you were talking about performance. That brings me to the next point, that it enables you to really focus on your performance, because when you are not 100% happy, in case you're not 100% happy with the tone you're getting, you might think, okay, until I get to this 100%, I cannot record. I need to get the tone right. And then you might spend hours or days chasing your dream guitar tone. And like, you could have a moment in there where you're really, really creative or in a good spot to play the guitar, actually, but you can't because you cannot get the tone right. And if you record a DI, it's enough to get like 80% or 90% of the tone and just record the damn DI, and then you can always think about tone afterwards or leave it to a mixer to do it. But yep. it just enables you to really focus on the performance whenever you feel like playing, and you don't need to get to 100% if that's something that's holding you up. Like,
right. So. Yeah. So maybe we should talk about why else DIs are great and necessary, if not essential. Big thing for me is that you can't really edit a guitar track. I mean, you can, but what you have available in visual kind of feedback to make your decisions on in editing is really skewed when it's an amp track. Because there's all this extra noise and distortion that kind of changes where you think notes start and end. So you're just kind of looking at this blob of audio that's really hard to actually, you can do it, but it's just not the ideal way. Where a DI is like this clean representation of the pick attacks, the transients, and how long things are sustaining, where one note starts and where one note ends. And it makes it much easier to edit. So for editing alone, I think DIs are totally worth having every time you record a guitar.
Yeah, so true. It is such a great thing to have DIs just for that. You wouldn't believe how much longer it takes to edit, especially heavily distorted guitars when there is no DI. You see this blob, this square waveform thing. You can't really tell where the attacks are and everything. And with a DI, it's so easy to do that. And it's also that the not only is the distortion gone, but also it has like it is an actual representation of all the dynamics that happen during playing. So if you use gates or software to detect transients or whatever, it's just not just the manual cutting and like the visual, like the seeing of where the transients are, but also software that reacts to dynamic signals coming in reacts better to DIs because there are actual dynamics in there. And right. It's so much better to have those there, even if you don't use them for the mix at all. If the tone is really awesome, just for editing.
Yeah, just for editing. Like that's most of the time, that's what happens with me, is the DI is just there to make editing a breeze. And, you know, if you need to like see if you've got a doubled up guitar left and a right and you need to see if they're actually tight, something sounds funky, you're going to like just look at it and know exactly what's going on. And if you don't have that DI, it's like your guess is you can only use your ears, which is hard, if we're honest.
Yeah.
So totally set it up for that. Another cool thing about DIs is that they can take way more abuse in editing than a guitar recording, like an amp recording can, like especially with stuff called Elastic Audio. Elastic Audio is what it's called in Pro Tools. I don't know what other DAWs call that or if that's like a universal thing.
I think in Cubase it's called Vary Audio.
Okay, I think I've heard like Flex Time and something else.
That is Logic?
In Logic, yeah. Maybe. Yeah. So essentially it's like time stretching software where you can stretch or shorten notes rather than just chopping a block. Oops, I hit my mic. Rather than just chopping a block and moving it left and right, you can actually like change the length of notes. And that's not something I do a lot of because it can cause artifacts. But DIs can handle that a lot better than a recorded amp sound can, especially a distorted one, because the distorted signal is too complex. There's too many noises going on, and it generally doesn't respond well to this Elastic Audio time stretching stuff, where DIs seem to do a good job at it. Furthermore, even with just slip editing, chopping it up, DIs also do better with that. And when you take one of these DIs that you've edited with Elastic Audio or slip editing, chopping it up, and you reamp it, it like erases the proof of all of those edits. Like it's weird. When you reamp an edited DI, it's like all those edits disappear, even if you can notice them in the DI. It's pretty magical. So if you have like a really bad performance, a DI might be able to salvage it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also that what you said about the less complex thing. Sometimes, I mean, it's difficult with chords, but sometimes you need to even tune a guitar. Sometimes you need to retune leads. With leads, you can do that often, like a solo or a sustained single notes or whatever. They can be tuned, but it's a lot easier to do that with a clean DI than with a distorted tone that has a lot of overtones and it's just much more complex. And the tuning software will have a hard time detecting the notes, and it gets even more complicated with chords. But a clean DI, sometimes you can't even fix a chord or something as complex as that. You can fix it. You might notice some artifacts, but as Malcolm said, as soon as you reamp it, then it might be gone. So with a DI, the Elastic Audio and also tuning is much, much better and easier to do.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's talk about something that makes the whole reamping thing and the use of DIs very, very convenient, and is something that is becoming more popular because the software got so good, and that is using amp sims. So not really using a real tube amp or solid state amp, but a plugin that emulates such an amp. And right. Back in the day, those were sounding pretty awful, but nowadays they sound really great. And apparently, I found that out recently, you can get great tones out of the old ones as well if you use great speakers or speaker simulations. So that's a whole other thing. But amp sims can work really well, are used on tons of great sounding records. And there's a couple of benefits to them that you only get when you record DI tracks, because that's how they work. You record a dry DI signal, the signal that comes right out of your guitar or bass. You record that, and in your DAW, in your software, you use a virtual amp. That's how it works. So you need to capture DI for that. So either just the DI or a DI in addition to the amp tone. Now let's look at why amp sims are so powerful.
Yeah, I hate that they're good, but they are good. They've gotten to that point. They just have. And it's awesome, actually. But it's just kind of like a weird transition because you get used to just like not believing that they can be good enough when you come up on amps. And then I adopted a Kemper. And I love it. And now it's getting to the point where I don't even need that. I mean, I still use it as my main kind of go-to, but there's definitely amp sims that can get the job done for sure. So the coolest thing about amp sims is obviously that you can just plop it on a track and try out 100 different combinations with the click of a button, you know, instantly. There's no actual like reamping process where you have to send it out of your computer into the amp, re-record it back into your computer, which all has to happen in real time, right? So it's actually quite time consuming to do a normal reamp, where an amp sim is instant. As soon as you drop the plugin on the track, it's happening. And most of the amp sim plugins have multiple amps inside of it, so you've got a bunch of options there. It really depends what you're using. But it's just instant. It's quick. It's like instant reamping. Tons of options, you know, more amp, like chances are that one of these amps and plugins will have more amps inside of it, quotation mark amps, than you have real amps sitting in your room, right? Most people only have one guitar amp. So it's like, okay, are the chances are that this one PV beside me is the perfect amp for this song, or am I going to find the perfect amp for this song in the 12 options inside of this plugin? Chances are that plugin's going to have one that's better, right? Maybe not, but it's, you know, the odds are that's the odds.
Yeah. And sometimes even a little like lower quality, but having the right kind of amp or the right type, the right vibe for the song is preferable. So it could be that your whole chain with your amp that you have and your mic and preamp and everything you have is really amazing sounding. But if it only does one thing or a couple of things and you need a different thing for your song, going with a different sim that might not sound as pristine, but it's just better for what you're doing, might be better than your amp. So, yeah, there's something to be said about the the choices that you have with those plugins, and it's kind of having a great amp collection in the computer.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely something to be said for having too many options, but with amps and tone in general, there's no perfect one-size-fits-all solution. So you have to have options. And it's when people are trying to do full records with just one guitar and one amp that, you know, maybe one song sounds amazing, but the next song doesn't. And it's because they tried to make the same shoe fit, yeah. Right? It can't always work. So you have to be kind of flexible, and amp sims are easily the most affordable and quickest way to have flexibility in guitar recording.
Yeah. And where your songs can really benefit from the flexibility is also that not only do you have then the choices and the collection of amps, but we're always talking about how the vibe, the take, the energy, the performance is the most important thing. And imagine, like, even if you have a couple of real amps, imagine if you have like to set up all these amps, all the microphones, all the different things, and compare them. It's so time consuming, and it's so distracting. It's distracting you from being creative, from the actual recording and playing. Whereas when you have a couple of plugins or a great plugin with a lot of options in there, you can just play quickly, skip through all the amps, find a tone that you like, and it's just such a smooth, fast workflow, and it's such a creative thing to do. And that is like where your records can really benefit from that also. Not only do you have the right tones, but it's just so inspiring to just sit there and play and not having to worry about back cables and 10 microphones and the amps and cabs and maintenance and all of that. And like, it's so easy. And if you feel like playing, you just open up the session and you start, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
That said, Benny, I'm curious.
Yeah.
What are you normally using for your amps these days? Are you landing on real amps in the Kemper universe or like modular universe, you know, or in amp sims generally?
I started with real amps only. Then I still have a couple of those, and I also have, I'm lucky to have a lot of friends in bands that where I can borrow amps, a specific amp if I need them, and I have a lot of options there. So I had, in theory, I have all the real options. But to be honest, for the last, I don't know, dozens of productions actually, I haven't used a real amp. So I have used the Kemper a lot. That you love, but I eventually sold it because I like using plugins now. I really do. Plugins or real amps. Sometimes still the real amps, but lately mostly plugins, actually. And I love the Yasteel Tone Hub, which is kind of similar to the Kemper in plugin form. So that one's really great. And then I have a lot of amp sims, to be honest. So I have kind of a collection there. I have almost all the Neural DSP stuff. I have STL Tonality plugins. I have the Tone Hub. A couple of other things, the Plugin Alliance, Brainworks, AmpSims. And yeah, so I really love those. And the main thing for me was when I made the switch was when I noticed how little the difference of the amps sometimes is and how small that is. And how big the difference is that a cab actually makes. We've talked about that already on the podcast. But once I found out that some of the amp sims that I didn't like before suddenly sounded really awesome if I used a great IR, or sometimes I set up a real cab and microphones and just send them through a power amp into the cab. That I do, right. I do that sometimes. And that can improve almost any amp sim so drastically. And once I found out that that's the case, I really didn't bother setting up real amps anymore. But I do the shootouts and the plugins are good enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was the same way. Started on real amps and then I got a Kemper. I'm still just grossly in love with that thing. It like instantly made all the guitarists I was recording with sound a lot better.
Yeah.
Having the right tone option at the right time. I love that thing. I'm still more in that than I am on plugins, but you know, I haven't really gone too far into the IR game. So based on your advice, I'm going to kind of delve into that. Even with the Kemper, because on the Kemper you can turn the cabs off,
and you should. So
I could
You should. Yeah. I have to say that. Like the Kemper, they got most of it so right, and they got it like it's an amazing box. But there's one thing they got totally wrong, and many people making profiles as well, and those are the caps. I think I don't know why that is, but just try it. Try the Kemper with a third party IR, and see and hear right. the difference. It's like a world of difference. So do that.
Okay, I will. Yeah. If anybody wants to kind of hear more about this stuff that we're talking about, we covered it pretty in depth in episode 5, which was the 5 most important parts of a great guitar tone.
To get back to the topic here, what I was talking about when I said I use plugins instead of real amps most of the time, I was talking about mixing or reamping before mixing. Because mm-hmm. there's a difference to me when I actually record someone or when I did record more. In those cases, I still love real amps. And that's just, or real caps at least, because some people play differently when they stand in front of a cab and when they interact with yes. the cab, when there's like the feedback coming back and there's actual air that's being moved. And so for tracking, I like the combination of a real amp and a DI, but that doesn't mean that I can't replace that amp later on with a sim or enhance it with a sim or combine different things. So in mixing, plugins. When I'm tracking, a real amp is great because it just feels different. And I don't know, that is just one more option, because then I have the real thing, I have a DI, I can add amp sims, I can replace the real thing. So I have all these three things, and that's mm-hmm. what I prefer. So yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I'm pretty close. Normally I'll have a DI, my Kemper, and an amp going when I've got a band in the studio. That's like, just cover all of it.
Yeah.
You know, because everybody wants to use their amp. They brought their amp and they're like, this is my tone. And then, you know, 90% of the time, it's not their amp that ends up making the cut. But we tried.
Exactly.
And they're used to playing to it, like you said, right? So sometimes they monitor that and it's great. One more superpower for both amp sims and reamping into even into real amps or modeler's Kemper is that by reamping, you have the ability to process the DI signal using your plugins and your software in your DAW, which is really awesome because you can do some really crazy things to the signal before it hits the amp or the amp sim or the modeler, whatever it is hitting. And that's what I'm really falling in love with. It's this ability to like clip things or EQ the signal before it even hits the amp and really shape it. You can change the dynamics of the DI signal in really, really powerful ways, because software plugins that's how most songs are being mixed nowadays, is with this software. So you can do some really powerful things that are a lot harder to do with just going straight into an amp from your guitar. So I'm loving that. That's getting me really great results when I'm doing any mixing these days.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. That's what's been done for a long time with pedals in front of an amp, right? But mm-hmm. When you're recording a DI track and you have it in your DAW, you can do what people love to do with pedals, but you're not limited to the pedals. And that's the great thing. You can always send it out and through your favorite pedal chain, but you can also use plugins where chances are they are much more powerful than the standard guitar pedals. And you can get really creative here, or more precise. You can do a similar thing that a pedal does, but just better or more precise. So absolutely agreed. Love that. Especially the clipping can be awesome. Like, it's basically what people did with tube screamers. Like this, a little bit of saturation, a little more mid-range focus, a little tighter low end, less woofiness. Mm-hmm. So you can really fine-tune that stuff if you clip it or distort it slightly in the DAW before you send it to the amp. So absolutely agreed. Yeah. What's also great is you have that same tone, that chain that can be really complex. You can have that everywhere if needed. So imagine if you collaborate with your bandmates or with a mixer and you come up with this really crazy pedal board thing that you have. Only you will have that, probably. Like the mixer or your bandmates won't have that. And if they, mm-hmm. If you want them to use the same tone or something similar, it's hard to make that possible. And like a mixer couldn't send the DI through a similar chain oftentimes. But if you have that virtual chain or an amp sim, it can be as complex as you want it to. it's much easier to make that work in a like a collaboration setup, because it's much cheaper to just get the same plugins or share licenses if there's multiple or whatever you can do. It's so easy to work for multiple people to work on the same thing, even if it's very complex, compared to having a very complex real amp setup that you want to replicate in a different spot.
I have one more question for you, and it's what is your thought on dry versus wet DIs? And by that I mean stuff like guitar pedals being printed onto the DI track or not.
It's a very good question, and I don't think there's the right solution here. I think the way I do it is, whenever it is something that doesn't change the way someone performs, I recommend not putting it in the DI. So putting it putting it after the DI box.
Post-DI.
So or recording it to a separate track. But whenever it is something that has to be part of the performance, or that is basically part of the performance, so sometimes that's delays, certain rhythmic
delays. Or like an octave pedal can be.
Yeah, something like that. Then I will actually encourage people to just print that with the DI, because that's, to me, that's not so much processing, like an EQ or compressor or something. That's just part of the performance for me. Mm-hmm. And if you remove that, people play differently, and it's very hard to mimic that later. Yeah, so whenever I consider something a part of the performance, I will say record it with a DI and I'll just use it.
Yeah. Most times this is better just printed onto the reference amp recording, you know, like, because like we said, we're trying to still dial in an amp tone or a reference tone if you don't have an amp or whatever. And just routing your pedals only into that and keeping a clean DI is like usually the way to go. But yeah, sometimes you do need to capture those effects. Otherwise your mixer might not understand what a part's meant to be, especially if it's like a really like U2 delay kind of thing where it's like this big rhythmic thing. Like, how would they know? So you have to send them that, or at least get a reference made, you know, record it dry and create a reference to kind of show them what's going on. Which we should talk about, because a lot of this is for the mixer. It benefits the recording band as well, in that you're able to edit better and you have way more options. So the chances of you being able to get a good product are definitely going up. But all of this really becomes extra useful once it reaches your mixer.
Yeah, sure. And a mixer has a lot of flexibility with the DI, and they can not only replace the entire signal if it's just wrong or doesn't fit the song well, a mixer can also just enhance your tone. That is something that I love to do. Sometimes when people send me a tone that is not bad, but it's just something's missing, like there's maybe low end missing, or there oftentimes it's a character thing in the mids that's just not there. Sometimes I want to have it more hair, like more grit or whatever, or I like there's a hole somewhere in the spectrum that I want to fill with something, you know, something's just missing. Then I'll grab an amp or an amp sim oftentimes, or something really weird, sometimes just some plugin that does something, I don't know, and then just add it to the signal, to the amp track that I got, and kind of add and bring back what I think is missing. And that is really, really powerful, because that way I can preserve the original character and the original tone, but I could just, bring it to another level, make it pop more, make it more 3D, make it have more low end, whatever. And that's really cool. So I only replace it if I really think it doesn't fit at all. Or if I think I have a similar thing, but that's just better, then I might replace it. But whenever I can, and whenever there's something about the original tone that I just like, I'll keep it, and then I add whatever's missing. And there's a couple of cool things you can do, actually. There's you can use really weird things, like something like a pocket amp, these little small Marshall amps that basically only have mid-range, like these tiny amp things. I have some IRs that are really great. Like I use some amp and then send it through an IR that's actually been a headphone capturing an amp or something like that, a cab or something like that. So some really vibey, weird, distorted mid-range things I really like to, tuck those in, and can do a lot of cool things with a DI that you couldn't if there's no DI.
I bet people are kind of starting to believe us by now, you know, that it's totally worth doing, especially in a self-recording band setup, where chances are your experience level isn't huge, right? You probably aren't a professional audio engineer if you're listening to this podcast and trying to learn. So this can really be the saving grace for you not having to redo your album. Or at least redo the guitars, because that does happen. I've just had to tell people that I cannot work with what they've done, especially in guitars. It's the easiest thing to get totally wrong, both in a recording performance kind of form, like with tuning stuff, but also with tonal and, you know, it's all the same, because with a DI, I can fix the performance stuff better, editing, timing and whatnot, even pitch, like Benny was saying, and also correct the tone because of reamping. So it's like the easiest thing to do. It even makes your life easier, because you can now record really easily by potentially even just plugging right into your interface through the Hi-Z. And so a guitar, one cable, and you have a professional product at the end of it after mixing.
Absolutely.
That's pretty great.
That's super great. And to the flexibility again, one thing that I don't really like is changing or making production decisions during revisions and recalls, or like when the mixing's actually done. But sometimes it can be necessary, and like the iTrack is the only way like you could actually pull this off. So you will be glad to have it. And one thing I could think of is on a production that I mixed recently, I had to do that. I came up with a DI sound based on the directions that the band gave me and based on their scratch tracks. So I came up with, not a DI sound, an amp sound with their DIs. And I thought it was great. It fit the mix, it fit the song. But it turned out, it's just a matter of taste sometimes, it turned out that the band was going for something a little different. And that also worked. So by the way, it was not just a matter of right or wrong. It's just different approaches. And so they listened to the mix, they loved everything, but they just wanted a different kind of guitar tone. So it was very easy, because I had the DI, even after it was basically mixed during revisions, to just recall the session, mute what I had done, mute the tracks that I had, and come up with a different tone. And with the amp sims, it's even easier and quicker, because I don't have to set up a whole new guitar rig. I just used different plugins, combined it with their original tone, and there it was, and I got it right. So if you don't have a DI at this, and people were had different expectations, because sometimes they send you a tone and then when they hear it in the mix, it's not what they thought it would be, and then you're stuck with having to redo everything, just as Malcolm said.
Right. Yeah, did we miss anything?
I don't think so. I mean, the whole thing that it comes down to is the garbage in, garbage out thing. That's always true with recording. So all of what we just said only makes sense if the DI signal you're recording is actually good. Mm-hmm. And it is very easy to record a DI signal. But on the other hand, it can go wrong. And there is multiple ways you could mess this up. So an important thing to know is that any amp or amp sim is limited by the quality of the DI signal, because that's what you feed it to the amp. That's what the amp or the sim has to process. So the quality of that signal is just critical. And there's different signals. We've also talked about that on another episode, but there is mic signals, line signals, and DI signals, like instrument signals, with different impedances and different levels and all of that. So first of all, you need an actual DI signal, an actual instrument signal. So, mm-hmm. And an actual instrument input where you plug your guitar into that can capture that. So I've seen a lot of people use digital desks for recording, and sometimes they don't have a high C input, so they will plug the guitar into a line in, for example. That is not made for taking guitar signals. So the high end and some other stuff will be not the same. It will just sound different. It might sound harsh. It might sound quieter, louder, whatever. So it has to be an actual instrument input and or a DI box that then feeds a microphone input, one of those two things. So that's the first thing here.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning to always listen to your DI track, even if you're recording an amp as well, or you have an amp sim on it. Mute that and listen to the DI and actually like check that it sounds like a DI. You might have a buzz in there, like a grounding electrical loop buzz that you don't notice when it's being ran through an amp. It really could be anything. Or maybe you've got active pickups and the batteries are dying and you don't really notice it when you've got like a heavily distorted amp sim on it. But once you listen to the DI, you're like, uh-oh, something's wrong with this. So always listen to your DI and just do a little check and make sure that it is what it is meant to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And that also enables you to analyze your source tones. So not only that it's technically correct and it actually is a DI signal and that there's no bus and stuff like that, but you will get insights on your playing, like how consistent you play. The DI track is much less forgiving compared to an amp track. So if you listen to the DI track and analyze how you play, you might find that you need to pick harder or that you bend stuff a lot that shouldn't be bended. And so the tuning is always off, like the intonation. And also, you might find that it is too dynamic and you should clip it or use a pedal or whatever. Or like you just get insights that you don't get when you, or not as easily get when you just use an amp. So that the DI track will also likely improve the way you play if you listen to it, if you take time to analyze it.
Yeah. It's amazing how good DIs can sound if it's really played well and captured well. I almost want to like try and find an example that we can post or something because they can be like pretty musical, surprisingly musical if they're kick-ass. So, sure. And if your DI sounds good, your amp tone's going to kick-ass.
Absolutely. There's also one other thing. We always talk about how important strings and drum heads and all these stuff the stuff is. And for strings, I find it easy to compare a reference track that I record in the beginning of a session with really fresh strings and then compare right. that DI track to whatever take I do a couple of hours later. And I can immediately tell if the strings are starting to die. And it's easier to do that with a DI for me than with a distorted amp sometimes. And once they start dying, I can change them. And I don't run into the situation where I think during recording, I think like, this sounds kind of dull. This sounds weird. I'm not sure if it's still the same. And you compare it and you're not sure. Something's weird. But if you have the DI and you compare it, it's crystal clear. If there's a loss of low end definition and high end and definition, everything. It's really...
Yeah, that's a great idea. I love that. I kind of do the same thing with drums. I'll record like hits of the drums at the beginning of the session, and then I can always look back and see if our like tuning has slipped or we need to replace the skin. But doing that with guitar strings with a DI is super clever.
Yeah, do that. That's super cool. And then finally, if you have a DI box or a high C input, there's a difference between the stuff that the different things that are available. So some interfaces have pretty good high C inputs, and some students of mine in the Self Recording Band Academy, they did comparisons, they did shootouts with partly surprising results. So some of the interfaces seemed to do pretty well, and the high C was just as good as a good DI box. And in some cases, the high C input was total garbage compared to a DI box. And it's worth doing a shootout here. I don't know, do you have any experience with typical interfaces that people might use at home, like the Scarletts or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I've used the Scarlett in the past, and it did the job, but it was definitely not as nice as my radial DI. There was definitely a difference there, especially in like the high end. Like it just didn't kind of sound lifeless, and it was almost like the dynamics were weaker in a weird way with the high Z on the Focusrite compared to my DI. I'm now using an Apollo, but I still prefer my DI. For my guitars, all my guitars are passive pickups, I should note. I use an active radial DI, and that's kind of like, that's my favorite.
Yeah.
They do sound really different. I do have a passive radial DI as well, and it compared to my active is quite a difference when you compare them.
Sure. But sometimes you have to go with a passive one because an instrument with high output level, like a bass with active pickups or something, or even some very loud active guitar pickups, they can overload the active DI box and then it starts to clip and distort. And then you need to go for a passive one with a transformer in it that just can handle these high signals and has a lot of headroom. So it definitely depends on your instrument. And it's good to have an active and a passive one, or the one that's suitable for your for whatever you have. And just do a comparison. I know it's hard. You can't compare every DI box out there with your interface, but maybe you have the chance to borrow one or to get an affordable one and compare that to your interface and see if it makes a difference. Just don't get the really, really cheap, crappy ones. But if you get a standard good DI box and compare that with your interface, one of the two options will give you decent DIs. I need to be careful with saying that because I know that some of the most popular DI boxes aren't actually that good. So you could end up getting one that's not that good. But I think if you at least compare two or three options, it one of those will probably do.
Yeah, definitely. And anything's better than nothing.
Exactly.
So when I was getting started on this stuff, I always let stuff hold me back. Like, I just need to like wait until I have this one thing. And it's not true. You can definitely use the Focusrite one plugged right into it. And people do. And if you are sending it to a good mixer at the end of it, they're going to make up for that difference in the reamping process. So don't worry. Just record. Make music.
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it and a great way to end this episode, because making music, that's what it's all about. And I think the iTracks have improved the workflow so much in combination with the AmpSims especially. So it's much more about making music if you use tools like that, and very less about complicated recording setups. As much as they are fun and as inspiring as they can be in a home recording situation, it's really hard to beat a great DI with a collection of plugins that you can just use and just go whenever you feel like it.
Yeah, it's never been more affordable and fantastic to be recording guitars right now. This is, if you're getting into it right now, you've got it made. This is awesome.
All right, so there's one thing that I want to tell you about, and that is an article that I wrote, and you can find that if you go to theselfrecordingband.com/DI tracks. It's a pretty in-depth blog post about how to actually record DI tracks, and it talks about basically what we were talking about today, but a little more in-depth and with a little more technical info, especially things like why a DI box makes a difference, or certain DI boxes sound different than others, like impedance stuff and when to use a passive one and an active one, stuff like that. It covers three different methods of capturing a DI track. So you might want to have a look at that, because if you're now convinced that a DI track is a cool thing to have and that it's even, I would say, almost a necessity to record a DI track, I mean, there's no reason not to. If you're convinced that that is the case, this article shows you how to actually go about it, what DI box to choose, how to plug everything together to make it work. So check out the selfrecordingband.com/DI tracks. And if that doesn't help enough, as always, just leave us a question, a comment, or send us an email, whatever. We're happy to help. And yeah, excited to hear your result.
I had a shout out to Seth Y. He's a fellow that's sending me some stuff. And he listens to this podcast. And he told me that he's buying more guitar strings. So
really?
We're doing it, Benny. We're changing the world. Yeah,
we've already changed it then. That's amazing. That's really amazing. Yeah. Oh, wow. That is so cool. Way to go. Keep buying more guitar strings and using them and changing them more often. Even you might have to buy even more now that you are comparing your DI tracks and not your amp tracks. So sorry for that. All right.
Right on.
See you next week. Thank you for listening.
See you guys.
Hey friend, thanks again for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed this one, just know that this is just a tiny fraction, a small taste of what we can actually do to help you completely transform your recordings and mixes forever. If you are really serious about your music, if you want to reach your goals as a self-recording artist, then please apply now for the Self-Recording Syndicate, our coaching program that takes you from where you are
to being able to completely independently produce and release exciting sounding music forever. If you join that program, you're going to be part of a very, very passionate, dedicated, committed group of self-recording artists from all around the world. And you're going to get a roadmap, guidance, feedback, personal access to me and the team. We're going to do everything, literally everything we can to help you make the best recordings you can possibly make. And it all starts with a free first call, completely free, no strings attached. Best case scenario, we're going to end up working together and we're going to completely transform the way your music sounds. Worst case scenario, you're going to get an hour of free coaching and an action plan that you can then take and implement on your own. So if that sounds interesting to you, get started now with your first completely free call by going to theselfrecordingband.com/call or just click the link in the show notes. See you next week.